Welcome back to the A10 WHB Studios. I am your host, Brad Porter, along with producer Jed Marshall. We've been talking college football for the last hour and a half. The Kansas Jayhawks falling at home to Baylor 38-9. So Kansas losing to a team that had not won a game all season. A game in which Baylor was favored by 8 to 9 points, depending on who you looked at. And Baylor wins easily 38-9. K-State goes to overtime and beats Texas Tech 42-35. Missouri, no problem with Florida, just cruising 45-16. Drew Locke, Lee Summit High School, 15 of 20, 228 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. And one thing about that Missouri game, if you don't watch the Missouri defense or focus on the Missouri defense, Anthony Sherrills is a graduate of Hogan Prep from right here in Kansas City. And Hogan Prep is one of my favorite high schools I have covered for the last 25 years. And their football coach over there, Phil Lascola, is one of the best in the business, one of the most genuine, honest, heartfelt guys you will ever meet. He coached Anthony Sherrills. And now Anthony Sherrills is having great success at Mizzou. He's a senior this year. He's been hurt off and on throughout his career, but he's having a great senior season, and he played great today against Florida, and Missouri gets a big win 45-16. The rest of the Big 12, I'll kind of take you around that real quick before we wait for we're expecting Paul Shirley to join us here, a former Iowa State basketball player who's got a new book out called Stories I Tell on Dates, which should be an interesting discussion because Paul has traveled the world playing basketball, and now he's a writer. That's his new career, and he writes some good, thoughtful stuff and some funny stuff as well, and it's kind of an interesting book to read, and he has some good thoughts. So we'll talk to Paul here in a couple of minutes. But taking you around the rest of the Big 12, I told you the score in the Bedlam game between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State has been changing every 90 seconds, just about. We just took about a 2 to 3 minute break there, and the score has changed again. Oklahoma has put up another field goal, and the Sooners now lead the Cowboys 38-31. So, for the guys on the Border Patrol, Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez, the combined total of points in the first half right now between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State with about a minute 18 to go in the first half is 69 points. So, the Border Patrol will be very happy with that. 69 points combined between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. So, true bedlam down there. And for Iowa State fans, number 15, Iowa State on the road at West Virginia. They're climbing back into this, but West Virginia still leads 20-13. And we now welcome in our next guest, an Iowa State man himself, Paul Shirley, played college basketball at Iowa State after growing up in the middle of farm country in Kansas. Paul, thank you for joining us from out there on the West Coast. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brad. You'll be proud to know that I went to a bar here in L.A. specifically to watch the first bit of the Iowa State game today, and they promptly got down 17-0.
So did you leave to try to change the luck?
I left because I felt like I had retaught myself a lesson, which is like, you can't, Iowa State football isn't going to stay good. That was a crazy thing for me to do. I know better than that.
Well,
I went to school there. I watched them get beat one time. 77-7 by Nebraska. It was, I think, 63-0 at halftime.
So you're a realist, and I'm an Iowa Hawkeye fan. I was born in Fort Dodge, but we moved away when I was six. There were a lot of people from the hometown where I was from where had said, if you don't get out soon enough, you won't get out. And Iowa's leading Ohio State now 31-17, but I'm not getting my hopes up because the other shoe is going to drop.
I mean, Iowa football has a little more – I don't mean to keep bagging on my alma mater here, but Iowa football has got a little more steadier history than Iowa State. Did I see that, like, Iowa State's played Oklahoma, I don't know, 70 times and beaten them three times or something?
I think that's correct.
Including their last win?
It was the first. It was one of those stats, like the first win since Lyndon Johnson was president, something like that. It was maybe Jimmy Carter, maybe Nixon. It was a long time ago.
they fit in the LBJ reference as a movie promo, maybe?
I'm not getting paid to do that. I wish I was. That would be fantastic. That'd be great. Be great for my career right now. We're talking with Paul Shirley, former basketball player at Iowa State, who's now transformed his career. Does a lot of writing online. He's got some books out. And I'll just preface this. Paul Shirley is a good friend of mine, a good friend of my friend Mick Schaefer. And I know you guys have worked together a long time over the years on different projects. And I know Mick has probably flamed out on that. Now he's just a news director at the NBC affiliate here in town in Kansas City.
He's just going to coast for the next 40 years.
Yeah, he's just going to have an aw-shucks lifestyle. And he's got – no, I kid. Mick's got an awesome career going, and that's how I kind of got connected with you is I got this book. And the book is called Stories I Tell on Dates. And at first when I looked at the title, I'm like, okay, is this going to be a guy just bragging about things he's been through in his life? Or is this a good tool? Because when you're on a date and you do have an interesting life – and say the other person that you're out on a date with maybe doesn't have much to say, maybe you can open up that conversation a little bit with things because you've played basketball all over the world. How many countries have you played basketball in, Paul Shirley?
So I've played for teams that were headquartered in only, I guess four different countries if you count the United States of America.
Okay.
But that has taken me to all sorts of places. When I played in Greece, for example, we played in Israel and Turkey and France and the Czech Republic and et cetera, et cetera. So I've been a couple places. I've seen a couple things, and that has definitely led to some stories to tell. But I think what's universal about this is that everyone has certain stories that they use to explain who they are. My stories conceivably or maybe a little more interesting just because I've gotten to live so many places and I've seen a bunch of stuff. But I think we all have ways that we frame ourselves. If I had to ask you to tell a story from childhood that sort of explained who you are, where do you think your brain goes?
My brain would go to when my parents decided to move to Kansas City when my brother and I were kids. My mom wanted the opportunity to live in a bigger city and expose us to more things, and major league sports was part of it, and just have a wider range of experiences and a wider range of people to meet and interact with. And I think that changed our lives forever. And there's nothing wrong with my hometown of Fort Dodge, Iowa. It's a small town. I love it. Moved out of there when I was 6 years old. But it's a different experience than moving to Kansas City and growing up here. So I would say that changed my life forever.
Right. So I think even in that telling, we understand a lot more about you than if I did a little questionnaire of how do you feel about things? So I think we all have these small stories that explain who we are. Now in the book, obviously stories are a lot longer. There are 14 chapters, and if I told you one of them, it would take me 30 minutes. And if I were on a date, that would mean that I was a sociopath. So I think in a lot of ways, the book is a way, or the title of the book is a way to frame a memoir that occurred to me when I was on dates. And I was like, oh, man, I find myself kind of telling the same stories, almost like I'm going into material. I should probably write some of these down.
Absolutely. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking with Paul Shirley, former basketball player at Iowa State, grew up in Kansas, and his new book is called Stories I Tell on Dates. And I should tell you, I was a big fan of your writing a long time ago, because I know when Mick Schaefer and you guys were working on projects together, he would always show me stuff, and I'd be like, man, that's pretty funny stuff, or that's pretty wicked, or that's pretty dark. I mean, it can cover all kinds of things. And I would encourage people, if you're on Twitter, follow Paul Shirley on Twitter, which your Twitter handle is fantastic. It's @PaulThenShirley. How did that come about? Because I think it's hilarious.
Well, thank you for noticing that. I have a girl's name for a last name. Don't know if we're paying attention.
Shirley.
And so when I was growing up, I feel like the only time people call me by my last name is if they're yelling at me, which would have been, coaches or somebody who didn't. Shirley, get over here. So I've never particularly enjoyed being called by my last name anyway. And then having a girl's name as a last name in seventh grade was kind of onerous. So I tend to shy away from having people call me by my last name. So therefore, I wanted to make it clear in the Twitter handle, it goes Paul and then Shirley.
And then Shirley. All right. Let me get into a couple of things in the book here. And again, it comes off, the title may come off as maybe here's a dating advice thing, but again, you, as you said, it's a collection of your life experiences that you may or may not share on dates, but considering all the places you've been across the world, and one of the things you've mentioned is, you know, growing up in a small town in Kansas, and you clarify this right at the beginning of the book, and I'm in the same boat with you. I'm from the country, but I'm not from the farm, and there is a difference. Mm-hmm. There is a difference because I grew up out in the country on probably 4 or 5 acres, but it was not a farm. It was definitely the country, but it was not a farm.
Yeah, that was always hard to explain. It's always hard to explain to people, like, let's say in L.A., right? Because they have certain conceptions about what Kansas looks like. And if I say, yeah, I grew up in a town of, or close to a town of 700 people, they just assume that I was raised on the back of a tractor. And they're not really aware that just because we have space doesn't mean that it's 30 miles from house to house. And I don't know, I kind of value the way that I grew up in that we were close enough to Topeka, which people who are listening understand is a big enough city to have some stuff, but we had the space to, like, run and play. We could go down to Mrs. Barnes's house and try to dam up the creek on her 80 acres if we needed to.
Sure, she loved that.
Yeah. it has always been, I think, living in Los Angeles, having lived in, you know, Barcelona and Athens and all these places, when you say Kansas, it's very iconic to people. They, of course, think of the Wizard of Oz, which is tiresome to those of us from Kansas, and they think of, oh, that's where our Superman is from. It has a certain stereotype attached to it, and I think that has played into the way that I've lived my life in that I've been able to sometimes rely on that. I will cop to, like, well, you know, I'm just this dumb kid from Kansas. But it's also led to me having a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because I don't want people to underestimate me just because I'm from the Midwest. I think people out here and in New York tend to do that. They seem to think for some reason that we don't have books and technology in the middle of the country.
Yeah, we just a stick in the dirt and, you know, writing symbols and no real form of organized language or anything like that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is interesting when I will meet girls and go on dates, as it's kind of fitting for this book.
Sure.
Talking about it. And maybe I say I'm from Kansas, right? And they'll be like, well, I remember being on a date one time with a girl from Corpus Christi, Texas. And I said I was from Kansas, and she's like, well, what's that like? And which is always a weird question because you're like, well, I don't know. It's like everywhere.
How do you boil down an entire state and life experience?
Right. And then she said, well, and I said, well, have you been to Kansas City by chance? And she's like, no, why would I ever go to Kansas City? And you're like, you're from Corpus Christi, Texas. That's not Paris, France. Like, relax. There's 2 million people in Kansas City. There's all sorts of things to do, and the people are great, and there's all kinds of art and culture. I do think it like, leads me to get my back up a little bit sometimes when people are so dismissive of the heartland.
We're talking with Paul Shirley, former basketball player at Iowa State, who's now turned writer and lives the high life out in L.A. His new book is out called Stories I Tell on Dates, which is very funny. And after reading passages over the last few days, I will tell you that it's not for children. I would qualify that. It's not for children, but it's highly entertaining. It's not offensive in any way. I wouldn't find it offensive, but it's highly entertaining. So when since it's called Stories I Tell on Dates, but it's more about your life experiences, what do you tell people when you're describing what it's like to go overseas and be in a country like, I know in one part, you were talking about being in Russia. You were at a science camp over there. And I don't know if anybody there spoke the language, how you fit in with that, and how did those experiences help frame you or form you later in life?
Well, so, I mean, you...
And science camp in Russia, I mean, they're launching rockets every 5 seconds.
You nailed science camp in Russia, but they weren't in the same place. I was in Russia to play basketball.
Okay.
And the format of the book is each chapter starts on a date, and then I explain how I came to be on that date, and then I explain why I might tell a certain story. So in this context, I'm in Russia, as far from Meriden, Kansas, as you could possibly be, and this girl is saying, like, so you must be used to, like, living kind of this bizarre life of going so far away. And I say, well, maybe now, but it hasn't always been this way. And then I go back and tell a story about being super duper homesick at science camp at Rock Springs Ranch in Manhattan, Kansas.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's why I maybe am so attuned to the fact that we do tell these stories. When I am in an odd situation, I think I'm likely to want to help someone understand who I am really quickly. And so, like, if I tell that science camp story about being so homesick and having to figure out how to use a payphone for the first time, I think that helps someone understand me, because their assumption about me is, oh, he's 6'9" and you know, fairly good with people and all of this, so he must be the most confident human in the world. So sometimes it helps to explain, like, no, it hasn't always been this way. And at my core, I'm still this 10-year-old boy who was in tears while calling his mother from Rock Springs Ranch.
We're talking with Paul Shirley, a former basketball player at Iowa State. His new book is out, Stories I Tell on Dates, which is, I think it's very entertaining, and there's a lot of funny anecdotes in there. Let me ask you, can you tell the Las Vegas story, or can you tell it in a way that we can talk about on television? Or on radio, pardon me.
I think the more important thing is, can you tell that in fewer than 2 minutes so we don't lose all of our listeners?
Okay.
Which I think I can do. Yeah.
A lot of celebrities.
So the setup is, I was invited to go to Las Vegas with a friend of mine who we'll call Scott. That's what his name is in the book. Of course, everyone's name in the book is not their real name. Anyway, Scott is this massive former basketball player who, at the time, I was living in L.A., and he knew how to get into nightclubs, and he was the guy who kind of figured out how to get past bouncers and all of this all the time, which was a very formative time in my life. Anyway, he took us to Las Vegas. We had an invite to go to Tiger Jam, which was Tiger Woods' big charity event back before Tiger Woods was a...
So you're going to a party. You're going to a Tiger Woods party here.
Going to, it's at the MGM Grand. Sting is going to perform. It's a huge, huge thing. And we've got like 16th row seats, and Terry Hatcher's a row in front of us. And right before the show starts, before Sting's about to play, this guy taps me on the shoulder and says, "Hey man, congrats," and holds out a fist for me to bump. And I'm like, oh, and then it occurs to me, he thinks I'm Matt Leinart. Because at the time, Matt Leinart...
You do look a little like Matt Leinart, yeah.
I do. I was in L.A. at the same time as Matt Leinart's glory days, when he was winning the Heisman. And that day, as it turned out, he had just gotten drafted by the Arizona Cardinals. So this guy thinks that I'm Matt Leinart, and he's saying congrats. And in my brain, I'm like, well, I don't need to disabuse him of this notion, because, you know, it's going to enhance his experience to think that he met Matt Leinart. And it doesn't... It's not out of the question that Matt Leinart would be in Las Vegas on draft day. So I bump his fist, and I turn around, and Scott's like, "Hey, so it's happening again, huh?" I'm like, "Yeah." So we watch Sting, and it's whatever, fine. I'm not a huge Sting fan. We then go to the after party. And the after party is in the House of Blues, and we've got the lanyards, and we're thinking this is going to be great. It turns out to not be so great. So pretty soon we leave, and Scott and I are wandering around in the casino, and we see these two pretty girls who turn out to be teachers from Idaho who are having a Las Vegas weekend. And we strike up a conversation, and then Scott and I kind of trade glances. We're like, well, it's getting kind of late. This is the best we're going to do tonight, so let's ask these girls if they want to come back to the party with us, because we've got ins, and what we've learned, or what Scott knows about going to parties, is you can always get pretty girls into a party. So we hike back to the House of Blues, and Scott bounds up the steps to talk to the bouncer and get us in, and I'm left standing talking to these couple of girls, and I'm kind of getting like, wow, I don't know if we're going to do this, but I think it'll be fine. So then Scott comes back down the stairs. He's got this dejected look on his face. He says, well, the bouncer says if they don't have lanyards or passes to get in, there's just no way we can get them in. So we're all despondent. The party is looking like it's over. And then none other than MC Hammer appears at the velvet rope like a genie. And MC Hammer points at me and says to the bouncer, hey, what are you doing? He can do whatever he wants, because MC Hammer also thinks that I am Matt Leinart.
Matt Leinart.
So smartly, I say, all right, everybody, get on in there. And so the girls and Scott go into the House of Blues. And I'm feeling pretty happy with myself because I've been the one for a change to get us into the party instead of Scott. And then, though, I'm faced with this situation. MC Hammer is looking at me, and I don't know if I've ever met MC Hammer before in the context of if I'm Matt Leiner. So I'm getting a little nervous. Like, what if
you may have to relate us? You may have to relate something that you guys talked about before.
Exactly. We may go way back, and I don't even know it. So MC Hammer is holding the drink, and he's like, "Hey, man," and I'm getting nervous. I'm like, "What's he gonna say?" And he just goes, "You good?" I was like, "Yeah." And he says, "You need anything? You let me know." And then he disappears like the genie he once was, and we have a fine little night in Las Vegas, thanks to my ability to keep my mouth shut.
We're talking with Paul Shirley, former basketball player from Iowa State. His new book is out, Stories I Tell on Dates. Have you ever met, since you look like Matt Leinart, and you've been confused as being Matt Leinart and gotten into parties based on the fact that people think you're Matt Leinart, have you ever met Matt Leinart?
Oddly enough, I have. When I was out here at that same time, Tim Floyd was the basketball coach at USC. Tim Floyd was my coach at Iowa State for a couple of years. So I would go hang out at practice from time to time and ran into Leinart in the weight room a couple of times. And he does look a lot like me. His eyes are closer together than mine. And he's only, in basketball terms, 6'5". So I can definitely get it when people mix us up or used to mix us up because we have the same sort of scruffy, hipster-approved beard and we have dark hair and we're, white dudes who are above 6'4".
Well, you have a better comparison than I do, and we're coming up on a break here, but I get three comparisons. I've gotten this since I was probably 14 or 15 years old. One I used to get, you look like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Got that all, especially when the movie came out. I got that all the time. Jed Marshall's nodding. You can see it a little bit. I'm older now, so I got, a few more wrinkles. The other one I used to get all the time was Carson Daly. I would get that one.
Oh, that's not bad.
And, sometimes I would do up the hair and put on the sunglasses and, didn't have any Hollywood celebrities to hang out with. And then the third one I would get, which was odd, but John Livingston, who was... who's been in several movies. He was in Band of Brothers, and he was in the Jon Favreau movie, Swingers. He was in Swingers. He was the guy who was trying to get jobs at Disney all the time. I would get that one, too. So I'll take those three, but you're better off with Matt Leinart.
Yeah, I think I'll take Matt Leinart over what I used to get in college with Jim Carrey because I had close-shaven and, I think, again, prominent cheekbones.
Right.
Jim Carrey.
And Jed Marshall corrected me. It's Ron Livingston, not John Livingston. So Ron Livingston.
Oh,
so.
Like Office Space.
Yes, Office Space, exactly, which I watch every time it comes on, start to finish.
Oh, that's a handsome dude.
Good-looking dude. Hey, I appreciate your time, Paul Shirley. And let's promote the book one more time and tell us where you can get it. It's called Stories I Tell on Dates, which is kind of a collection of things you have been through in your life all over the world, playing basketball and living as a writer in L.A. Where can we find the book?
So you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of those things. I should mention as well, I will be at the Leawood Barnes & Noble on Friday, November 17th, 7 p.m. We're going to do a little book signing and then go hang out afterwards. So come see us, and I'll tell more stories, none of which will have to do with Matt Leinart because we've already told that one.
And since you will probably not be on radio TV, you could probably tell some even juicier stories.
Yeah, we'll really dig into it. We'll have some wine. We'll get serious.
All right. Hey, and you got a bottle of wine on the cover of your book, which is fitting. So, Paul Shirley, hey, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and I look forward to finishing the book. Gotten through probably about a third to half of it, but hopefully I can finish this by the time you hit town next week. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad.
All right, that's Paul Shirley, author of the book Stories I Tell on Dates. Paul Shirley formerly played basketball at Iowa State, and he's gone on to live in L.A., and he's become a great writer. A lot of funny stuff, a lot of interesting stuff. So please pick up the book, Stories I Tell on Dates, and get out there on November 17th. We'll take a quick time out. More right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to Jayhawk Game Day, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter. We're kind of moving around since the Jayhawks wrapped up a few hours ago, so we want to throw in a couple other things, including your Kansas City Chiefs going on the road to face the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. And we're joined by Nick Jacobs right now to break it down for us. And, Nick, obvious news of the week came down Friday morning. There was a stay in the case of Ezekiel Elliott against the NFL, or however it's titled, and a judge ruled that Ezekiel Elliott can play for now. So he will play against the Chiefs. Has he practiced all week?
I don't know. I mean, I know the suspension was allegedly supposed to start Monday or Tuesday, so I don't believe he was supposed to be able to even be at the facility in previous cases before. So I would assume he practiced on his own time or something. I'm not sure, but either way, it's not surprising, but it is obnoxious because I don't know how many appeals this has been now. I was going to tweet out on Friday. I think I tweeted out on Friday that that there should be something in the CBA. You only get a certain amount of appeals, because between him and Brady, they've just set a precedent that you don't want set with every single time that something they don't agree with happens. It just gets old.
Well, and the thing, and look, I think a players association is important. You need to protect the players, but the players association agreed to these rules that the commissioner has the ability to suspend players for however long he sees fit. And when it doesn't go their way, they take it into the courtroom. And it's mind-boggling to me in this day and age of jurisprudence that hundreds and millions of dollars are spent on cases of football players being suspended and other people sit in jails and can't get a hearing. And I realize federal court, county court, local court is all different. But just the amount of money spent on this is mind-boggling. And at some point, Ezekiel Elliott will be suspended. He's not getting out of a suspension, and I'm not sure why they don't just take it and do it now, but I'm sure the Players Association is going to fight it every step of the way.
That's the precedent they set with Deflategate and now this. So it's a bad look for union, in my opinion.
So how does this change the dynamic for the Cowboys? Obviously, Ezekiel Elliott is arguably the top running back in the National Football League, maybe top two, top three. Their backups are veteran guys who are okay. And with the offensive line the Cowboys have and the way the Chiefs have played run defense, maybe it would not have mattered. Does it change things for the Cowboys?
In all honesty, it wasn't, in my book, it really wasn't going to matter who was running the football. I mean, Elliott gives you a lot more explosiveness. He can hit the hole much quicker. And for fans out there that are wondering, he's very similar to Jamal Charles in his speed and his ability to hit the hole quickly. So in terms of the Chiefs, it's a little bit different in the fact that if the Chiefs take the wrong step, it's over. He's getting 20 yards. I mean, that's just the reality with Zeke's speed. But with the Cowboys' offensive line, they were going to block it correctly to begin with, especially if Bob Sutton's in that 4-2 nickel sub-package with the four down linemen. Well, the two outside linebackers have a come-down lineman, and then Sorensen and Derek. So if they're in that formation, then it didn't matter who was running the ball. I mean, Alfred Morris, he's still got a lot of tread on his tire. Darren McFadden, I mean, he's had some knee issues over the years, but, I mean, he still has enough left behind that offensive line. In a way, the Cowboys' offensive line, I'm not going to say they're as good as the 03 Chiefs' offensive line, but they're probably one of the better ones I've seen since then.
This is Jayhawk Game Day, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter. We're talking Chiefs football with Nick Jacobs. Chiefs and Dallas this weekend down in the Lone Star State. All right, so moving on, another issue with the Cowboys that has popped up in the last week or two is that Dez Bryant, the all-star wide receiver, all-star, Pro Bowl wide receiver, I say all-star, but he has been vocal in his displeasure about not getting the football enough. And what I wonder is he saying this internally to coaches? Is he going up to Dak Prescott at practice saying, you're not throwing me the ball, give me the ball? Who is he complaining to? And is it a drag on Dak Prescott? Is it a drag on the coaching staff? Is it a problem for the Cowboys?
I don't know if it's necessarily a problem, because they've probably dealt with it for a couple of years now, and some people on staff probably dealt with it even longer. It's just something when a top shelf athlete like him, especially at receiver, they have a tendency for wanting to be the playmaker, and they don't like when they aren't the playmaker.
It goes back to Keyshawn's book. Just give me the damn ball.
That's pretty much it. And so in the Cowboys' case, all they're going to have to do is say, hey, Dez, we're going to line you on the left side against the Acker, Mitchell, Phillip Gaines, whoever they decide to start this week, and not on Steven Nelson and Peters, and we'll get you the ball about 10 times. Because, I mean, that's what the Broncos did last week is Demaryius Thomas. He had like 6 or 7 catches. All of them were on the left side. Every route he ran was on the left side, away from Peters. So, I mean, until Sutton's willing to adjust and – that regard to where Marcus follows the best receiver, and until he's willing to adjust that nickel package so that teams don't run on it all the time, until he does those things, I mean, those are the two ways to exploit the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's going to keep happening.
Well, let's get right at that issue there, because I think we were all a little stunned when Kenneth Acker was starting at corner last week opposite of Marcus Peters, and not a lot of us know a lot about Kenneth Acker. I mean, we see him at practice, training camp and things, but he hasn't been on the field a lot. And Terrence Mitchell, I don't believe, got one snap. Is that correct?
Yeah, not that I remember.
Okay.
I don't remember him getting on the field.
So I'm wondering, if you lose your starting job and you don't even get a single snap, is there a bigger issue? Was there perhaps a discipline issue involved? And I don't know, because the Chiefs aren't going to say anything, but to not even get a single snap, to me, is a little bit strange. And I really don't know who we're going to see out there on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't either. And that's part of the interesting thing, because, I mean, Kenneth Acker, really where his contribution is a special teams blocker on punt returns. And, I mean, he's on special teams a lot. So, like, that's kind of where his wheelhouse is. And he's occasionally there for depth if you need him at corner. And he did fine for being put in that position. But, I mean, he didn't have a terrible game like Phillip Gaines would have had. But, Mitchell's a much better corner overall. He's their second best option behind Peters. And for him not to be out there was odd at best and made you kind of wonder what's actually going on there.
Yeah, and like I said, we don't know because the Chiefs aren't going to tell us. We'll just have to figure it out, or perhaps it leaks out at some point. Final question on the Chiefs' defense. With the Cowboys having one of the top offensive lines in football, with Ezekiel Elliott getting the green light to play this week, does the Chiefs' defense have a way, or can they come up with a game plan to keep the Cowboys under, I don't know, 28, 31 points and keep themselves competitive in this game?
There are ways with their personnel to do it. What I foresee them doing, though, is Bob, rush-wise, all I see Sutton doing is he's going to bring four. He's going to play the contain game where the outside linebackers contain in, and Prescott has to step up in the pocket. And if the defensive tackles are undisciplined in their rush lanes, then that middle is going to open up and Dak's going to take off and get 10, 15 yards because of his speed. I don't really see him rushing 5 or 6 because Dak can beat that.
Right.
And he can get outside that pocket and throw on a dime. So unlike Trevor Siemian when he ran out of the pocket and threw wounded ducks every time or still dropped his body for an interception, Dak doesn't do that. He still throws it on the dime. And that's the difference between the Trevor Siemians and the Dak Prescotts of the world.
And I know the National Football League, and especially fantasy footballers, were stunned at the news that Deshaun Watson went down with an ACL tear in practice this week. But, you know, a lot of people want to compare these young quarterbacks to Dak Prescott. I don't see any similarities at all between the two. Dak Prescott is a big, thick, physical guy with a rocket for an arm. And Deshaun Watson is very talented, but physically not in the same class with Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say that Deshaun reminds me so much of Russell Wilson when he was young. So I'd say that's kind of the category where I see Deshaun out, was more the Russell Wilson aspect. But yeah, Dak's a different type of quarterback, and he can throw the football in different spots of the field that you're just like, how do you make that throw? I don't know how he made that. But yeah, so I mean, getting back to the game plan aspect of it, yeah, the Cowboys, if I'm them, I'd run the ball 42 times in the game, especially if I see that 14 nickel. I'd be like, just run it. We don't even, does you want to play running back this? We'll get you the ball that way. Don't worry, you still get 15, 20 yards. So, I think they'll throw it when they have to at times, but there's nothing encouraging to me that has told me that we are going to adjust our personnel or our scheme to stop the run. And until they do that, it doesn't matter. Teams are going to rush for 140 to 200 yards. And if Ezekiel Elliott doesn't get injured in the game, he could easily get 200. He may break a rushing record if they're not stubborn and keep running the ball.
Oh, boy. Buckle your seatbelts for this one. Now, this is Jayhawk Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Brad Porter. We're talking a little Chiefs football with Nick Jacobs. Follow him on Twitter, at Jacobs71. He breaks down a lot of video during the week and answers a lot of Twitter questions. A couple of final things on the Chiefs. We haven't talked much about the offensive side. What problems does Dallas present on defense, and are there opportunities for Alex Smith, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and some other players to take advantage here and get some points?
Yeah, I'd say the two biggest problems are on their defensive line. David Irving, a former Chief that was on the Chiefs practice squad that Dallas poached about 2 years ago in 2015. He fits the 4-3 a little bit better, and he's got the quickness and the stoutness that you want in a 4-3. And he does a good job on the interior, and he's able to manipulate that. And then Lawrence, the defensive end that they drafted, he's just got ridiculous quickness to where when he knifes through in a gap, especially if he's on the outside shoulder of a right tackle, and then he just knifes through, there's no stopping it. He can set you up in that quickness. Those are going to be their two biggest problems on defense. But as you notice, I didn't mention the other nine defenders. So that's actually, they don't really have – their secondary takes poor angles. They can be manipulated in their zone coverages really easily, and I expect Andy and them to do that. Their run defense isn't that great, and they also run that 4-2 nickel, and they got gashed a lot by the Packers and other teams with it. So the Chiefs could do the same if the offensive line gets their blocks held correctly. Hunt could potentially do that against them. There's a ton of opportunity and play action there because of how bad they are in their discipline off play action. There's some chances for some of the Chiefs jet sweeps. I mean, there's so much that the Chiefs can do, and inside the goal line, they are terrible against the bootleg. They do not defend that well, especially at their left corner. All they have to do is just a double move route, and he has no idea where the receiver or the football is. So there's a lot of opportunities. I expect it to be a high-scoring game, and if the Chiefs' offense is on point, like they're capable of being, I would not be surprised if they scored 35 in the game. That would not surprise me one bit. But Dallas is going to run that football, and depending how long the Chiefs can keep them on the field, that's going to depend. It's going to determine how many drives each team gets, and then how quickly each team can get in rhythm and sync.
All right, we're talking with Nick Jacobs. Follow him on Twitter at Jacobs71. Does a great job of breaking down the Chiefs. Final question for you. This is a two-parter, and this is just kind of for fun. Number one, will Tyreek Hill ever be allowed to throw the ball again in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform? Number two, do you think Chris Jones walked into that offensive meeting on Monday and said, hey, come on, where's my chance? That was terrible. Because Chris Jones wants to throw the ball.
Nagy, I know Nagy, the offensive coordinator, said that Tyreek wouldn't be throwing the
ball. No.
So, I mean, it was a play that really never should have happened to begin with.
No.
But they did what they did.
Yeah.
Could have gone up 21-0, but, you know. Life happens, apparently.
Yeah.
In terms of Jones, I think Jones does that pretty much every day.
Sure, I know. He really wants to throw the ball one time.
He doesn't. I don't even think he wants to throw. I think he wants to keep it and just try to run over.
He might. So maybe get him out on the bootleg.
Yeah. I'm sure he. I know he's pushing for it. And Mick Schaefer had the 41. Action News sports director had a question for him what he would call that play, and he said Jones would call it the Stone Cold.
So there you go.
Hungry little pig, he wants to call it the Stone Cold.
Stone Cold. That is Chris Jones. Hey, Nick Jacobs, thanks for joining us for a few minutes talking Chiefs football. Should be an exciting game Sunday, Chiefs and Cowboys down in Dallas. Enjoy. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Nick Jacobs. Again, follow him on Twitter at Jacobs71. A lot of video breakdowns during the week, and he also takes your questions. We'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Oh, that's a good one to go out on. Who is this, Jed Marshall?
This is Franz Ferdinand.
Okay, now I hear it. Now that he started singing, I hear it. Yeah, I like Franz. They kind of come and go every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, they came.
They're really good.
Yeah, they are really good. They came maybe like 5 years ago. Me and my buddy went. Amazing.
Yeah. No, they've been fantastic. Whenever I've seen them on award shows and stuff, they're great. This is not a music show, by the way. Sports Radio 810 WHB in the final minutes before we hand you off to national programming at 6 o'clock. I am Brad Porter. Our producer is Jed Marshall. It is an absolutely crazy day across college football. Let me take care of the three locals first. Kansas losing at home to previously winless Baylor 38-9. 38-9. So Baylor gets their first win of the season, and Kansas suffers another loss. It just I don't know what you call devastating anymore. They're 1-8. It goes from bad to worse. They look so good against K-State, and then now it's another step back. So Baylor beats Kansas 38-9. K-State goes to overtime and beats Texas Tech 42-35. K-State scored on the first possession of overtime, got the touchdown, and then Texas Tech on fourth down on their turn threw it out of the back of the end zone. So K-State wins 42-35. And Missouri, if you'd have told anybody 4 weeks ago, maybe after Dave Odom had that meltdown, if you told anybody then they would walk all over Florida, you might say, oh, they have a chance to beat Florida. You wouldn't think they would walk all over Florida. They curb stomped Florida, 45-16. Lee Summit High School grad Drew Locke, 15 of 20, 228 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 pick. Now, the storyline's going on right now. You could have the game of the day and the storyline of the day if you want to divide it up that way. So the game of the day right now, for those who know Todd Lebo,
Oklahoma, here at
Sports Radio 810 WHB, or Mick Schaefer,
Oklahoma State,
the news director at 41 Action News, who's an Oklahoma State fan. If you know those guys, they're focused on the Bedlam game, and with about 7.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, it is tied 38-38. This game is rocked back and forth. 7.5 minutes to go, 38-38. And that's in the third quarter, 38-38. So more scoring to come. Now, that's the game of the day that's going on right now. The story of the day might be what's happening to number 6, Ohio State. And I'm using the rankings. I believe these are according to the playoff rankings, not the AP and not the coaches poll, the playoff rankings. Number 6, Ohio State on the road in Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. And the Iowa Hawkeyes, Danan Hughes, the Iowa Hawkeyes are beating Ohio State 48-17. 48-17. And Iowa just picked off Ohio State in Ohio State's end zone to get the ball back. And they've had a couple of interceptions of JT Barrett on the day. So that is the story of the day. Ohio State had a chance to get back into the playoff picture, but if they lose to Iowa, especially by this margin, 48-17, Ohio State's done. So that's your story of the day. A couple of other top 25 games that could have implications for the playoffs. Penn State is right on that edge right now. They're at number 7 in that playoff poll, and they are at they're in East Lansing taking on Michigan State, and this game is tied 24-24 with 1.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And this game got delayed for well over an hour for lightning strikes. So Penn State and Michigan State tied 24-24 with 1.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Number 3, Notre Dame, as they stand in the playoff picture, at home against Wake Forest. Tim Grunhard and his son Colin will be smiling right now. Notre Dame is leading Wake Forest 48-30. With 6.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. My good friend Richard Baldinger, used to play for the Kansas City Chiefs, is a Wake Forest grad. He will not be surprised by this, but might be disappointed. So Notre Dame leading Wake Forest 48-30. Continuing through the playoff implication games, number 4, Clemson, who suffered that loss to Seren Petro's Syracuse squad a couple of weeks ago. There's a tie into every – somebody works here at 810 WHB or somebody I know has played or went to one of these schools. Clemson on the road against number 20 North Carolina State. Dave Doran, who has a lot of ties to this area, good guy. Clemson is leading North Carolina State 38-28 with 3.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. So Clemson leading North Carolina State 38-28 with 3.5 minutes to go. Iowa State, they are in danger of falling on the road at West Virginia. Iowa State all the way up to number 15. Big wins, as we all know, over Oklahoma and TCU. But they are trailing West Virginia 20-16 with just over 2.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and West Virginia has the ball. Iowa State just took a timeout. So Iowa State trailing by 4 with 2.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Out in the Pac-12, Washington State at number 25, leading number 21 Stanford 24-21. That game has 30 seconds to go. Stanford has the ball, but they have a long way to go. They're at their own 14-yard line, so they have a long way to go and a short time to get there. Again, the rankings by the playoff poll, Georgia is number 1. They've already wrapped up their business for the day. They beat South Carolina 24-20, so Georgia remains unbeaten at 9-0 and 6-0 in the SEC. Number 9, Wisconsin beat Indiana 45-17. Auburn at number 14 beat Texas A&M 42-27, and A&M is stuck on those 5 wins in terms of bowl eligibility. Auburn improves to 7-2. And number 16, Mississippi State, had a home game with UMass, and a little closer than what you would have thought, but Mississippi State pulls it out, pouring it on in the second half, winning 34-23. Games to come tonight that we'll be keeping an eye on, and I keep looking up at that Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game, still tied 38-38. Games tonight, Texas at TCU. That kicks off at 6:15, and that'll be on ESPN. And then also at 6:15, Central Florida at SMU. Yeah, not really interested in that one. In the SEC tonight, number 19 LSU against number 2 Alabama. Now, I don't give LSU any sort of chance in this game. But looking at what LSU has done the last couple of weeks, they beat Auburn. That was big for them. They beat Florida. They beat Ole Miss, which is not surprising. So maybe you say they can hang with Alabama for a little bit. I'm not sure, but of interest nonetheless, since Alabama's the number 2 team in the playoff poll. I mean, here's a game I kind of like. I like this one. Number 13, Virginia Tech at number 10, Miami in the ACC.
We'll be right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jed Marshall, thank you very much. And that'll be kicking off at 7 o'clock. So we'll go to network here at 6, and then we'll have the game for you at 7 o'clock. I like that game, and I really like what Mark Richt has done at Miami. I don't know if they're going to get back into the national championship glory days, but I really like what Mark Richt has done at Miami, and he's living the good life. First of all, he's back where he came from. He's basically living on the beach. He's making a few million bucks, and he doesn't have near the pressure that he had at Georgia at all. And then in the Pac-12 tonight, the night cappers, Oregon at number 12, Washington, and number 22, Arizona, at number 17, USC. The only reason I would tune into that game is to see USC lose again. All right, so we are just about out of time here on Jayhawk Game Day Live. Kansas loses at home to Baylor 38-9. K-State wins on the road at Texas Tech in overtime 42-35. And Missouri wins at home over Florida 45-16. Thank you very much to Jed Marshall for being our producer today. Thanks to our guests Paul Shirley, Nick Jacobs, and Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. I am Brad Porter. We'll see you next time on Sports Radio 810 WHB.